Hey folks, I'm here to tell you about Strange Brew Lounge Side in Austin, Texas. If you're wondering why Jimmy Dale Gilmore, Liza Gilkison, Christopher Cross, and Steve Poltz are all playing at this place, well, let me tell you why. In the 2013-2014 Austin Music Poll, they won Best All Ages Venue, Best Acoustic Venue, and Best Live Music Venue. So that means in the live music capital of the world, they won Best Live Music Venue. Okay, so Best Live Music Venue, why? It's got great sound. It's a great place to go watch music. It's centered around the music. Okay, they've got great shows. They've got weekly shows. On Mondays, they've got Renfro featuring Tony Scalzo from Fastball, Kevin McKinney from Soul Hat, many others. They have guests all the time playing. I'm playing there every Tuesday at 8 p.m. On Tuesdays also at 6 p.m., there's Darawa with Ernie Darawa from the Texas Tornadoes and his supergroup. Let me tell you what's going on tonight, August 22nd, 2014. At 8 p.m., Dead Man is playing. At 10 p.m., Milk Drive is playing. Now tomorrow, Saturday, August 23rd, they've got music going all day with a free kids show with Big Dawn starting off at 10 a.m. And then Myla Hardy plays at 5 p.m., Darawa with Ernie Darawa play at 7 p.m., and then Michael Hardy has a CD release at 9 p.m. So that's all happening on Saturday, August 23rd. Can you believe that? On Sunday, August 24th, at 11 a.m., The Purgatory Players, which features John D. Graham, Scrappy Judd Newcomb, Sela, John Green, and many others. Now, it's a Sunday sort of gospel brunch. Now, look, Scott has created a great environment for people to play there. People want to go there. It's centered around the music. People are focused on the music. That's why people are going there. So check it out for yourself, strangebrewloungeside.com. Plus, look, if you want to watch these shows, if you're living in like Europe or you're living in Miami or California, let me just tell you, you get on the web, you can watch some of these shows live on their streaming. And you can also tip the bands if you like them. That's what Scott's all about. He's all about the staff, from the sound people to the bartenders to the baristas to Scott the owner, all cool people centered around the music, making a great home for live music in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. All right, Strange Brew Lounge Side. Check it out at strangebrewloungeside.com. Let's get down. You may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Maldi.
All right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you. Yes, I do. Episode 302. My guest is Ed Jurdy from the band Heathens. They're an amazing band, and I've actually seen them kind of since their inception. They started at this club, Momo's, that I used to play all the time, and then kind of grew out of that. It was like four guys with residencies at Momo's, and they put their thing together, and they've since become a force of nature. They've played Austin City Limits, the show. They've toured the world, United States and Europe at least, and they're constantly on tour. They put out a ton of albums. They've been produced by my good friend George Reef, by the great Ray Wiley Hubbard. And they've been putting out live shows since 2012. I was going to say 2012. How do you say that shit? 2012? 2012? Anyway, whatever. They've been doing their live stuff, and they're about to start a West Coast tour on September 10th in Phoenix, going to the West and the Midwest. So anyway, Ed and I got together, and we started talking, and we touched on some stuff about Momo's and how that scene works, and it made me start thinking about kind of like all the other scenes that have happened and all the other scenes that are going on. What are these scenes, you're wondering, right? Well, I went back and started thinking like, well, I guess I've been in some scenes. I was in a scene in Houston without really knowing it. But when you start playing a place, I was managed by a club, so I was always hanging out there. So I was hanging out there on nights I wasn't playing. So I started to get to know the musicians in other bands. I started putting together shows with them. And that's kind of how it becomes a scene. Like, you guys become friends. You start working on stuff together. There was a great scene in the 90s at Steamboat that I was in. And, you know, man, I didn't even realize, you know, the scene until afterwards when you have some perspective on it. You look back and you're like, oh, that was a scene. Like, take, for instance, my relationship with AJ Vallejo. It all came from there. I met him there. And then we started doing a residency there together. And we would hang out after the show, became good friends, realized we really liked hanging out together, got together and started writing some songs. When I lost my guitar player, he started playing guitar and kind of helped me get on my feet as a main guitar player in a trio. And then we wrote songs together, and then we've had this friendship ever since. Well, that all spawned from that scene, from hanging out. And it's usually the owner of the clubs or the person that runs the club creates this scene. Like there was also the Continental Club. That place has been a consistent scene. It seems to happen when there's bands that have places that have weekly shows. Antones was a scene. Hopefully it'll come back together and it'll be a scene again. A lot of people always jamming. That's where you see people jump up with people, you know, Hole in the Wall. When they had the Sunday free-for-all, the rock and roll free-for-all, that was Paul Minor, curated that and created a scene. That's how I got in Skyrocket, was seeing those guys at one of those Sunday night shows. And then the next time they played one of those Sunday night shows, I was the keyboard player. Look at me now. That was like in 2002 is when I started playing with them. Now it's 2014, 12 years later, from a scene that I was a small part of that scene. I would say I was a bigger part of that Steamboat scene. Continental Club, I've been there, and I think when I'm there, I'm part of the scene. You know, I don't think of myself as like if they wrote a book about it, I don't think I'd be one of the main people. Antones, there was a time when I was a big part of that scene, I think. And you know, you end up doing stuff. They end up giving you shows and doing stuff. You know, Momo's was a great scene. That's where the Band of Heathens came from. Now, that was kind of a what you would call a super group. I mean, none of those guys were like household names like Eric Clapton and Ginger Baker or whatever, but that was like an Austin super group. They were guys that were all, but it came together organically. They were guys that were all playing on the same night, and then they decided to pull their thing together and start playing. And when they got together, they were much better than their individual shows, and they realized it was good. And look at this, years later, 9 years later, the Band of Heathens is out there, many records later, playing shows all the time. The Coveters came out of that Momo scene, a bunch of bands that were playing there. My band, Liars and Saints, came out of that scene, came from playing there. That's where we started playing. I mean, I know we played at Hotel Vegas. I know that we also played at the Mohawk a lot, but Momo's was our place. We got a weekly show there. That's where we all kind of met. That's where we all kind of, you know, kind of got our thing together. Anyway, that Momo's left a vacuum, and it seems like a lot of those people have migrated over to Strange Brew. And I'm not saying this because they have an ad on the show today. I'm saying that's a real place. That Renfro came out of there. You know, that's a band that started out of Strange Brew, out of that scene. It is a scene. Momo's was a scene. Continental Club's a scene. Antones was a scene. Steamboat was a scene. So places where musicians hang out, get to know each other, start doing stuff together, pull together their superpowers. It's almost like super friends, super groups. That's what happened with the Band of Heathens. Anyway, look, man, I think it's awesome. I think it's amazing. And I think what now when I look back on it, I was fortunate to be a part of all these scenes and how I ended up in Skyrocket from being in one of the scenes, how I ended up with a lot of great collaborations with like Billy White, with AJ Vallejo, with other bands that played there. I don't know if I ever collaborated with Dan Dyer from Breedlove, but he was part of that scene. So it's so cool, you know. I think that it's cool that there's these club owners that get into it for the music, and the way that they curate music is kind of instead of the taste of what's going to supersell. What they do is they bring in guys that they like. Hey man, I like your music, and it ends up being kind of the same taste that the bands have. Then the bands all kind of like start coming there to see it, and they want to play there because there's cool bands playing there. Boom, a scene, Electric Lounge. That was a scene in the 90s here. Okay, anyway, that's my scene story. The Heathens came out of a scene. The Band of Heathens came out of a scene. My guest is Ed Jurdy. He's a fantastic guy. I did not know that he had moved to Asheville, North Carolina. What a lucky guy. He's a dad. He's married. He's living in Asheville, North Carolina. He's living the dream. He was down here in Austin playing some shows and working on some stuff with the Heathens. I believe that they have a new single coming out. You can look for that at bandofheathens.com. I guess I have to stop calling them the Heathens and start calling them the Band of Heathens. The Band of Heathens. So yes, I have seen them since their inception when Brian Keane and Colin Brooks and Gordy Quist We're all in the band now. It's just Ed Jurdy and Gordy Quist running the show. And they also play together, like acoustically. He talks about it. They're doing some shows here, and he plays by himself. So, yeah, let's sit down and talk to Ed Jurdy from the band Heathens and check out their interesting story. They're a great band, and he has a great story, and he's a really nice guy. Handsome, too. Handsome Ed Jurdy from the band Heathens. Let's get down.
Mama got a voice like sugar, it's so sweet and fine. Sister singing Amazing Grace, she right in time. And they're laying poor Papa low in the ground that he worked in.
Were you guys playing on Friday in Houston?
We played, in Dallas, the Metroplex this weekend.
The DFW.
I'm playing in Houston tomorrow night with Gordy. We're doing doing a show at the Mucky Duck.
How do you balance obviously the Heathens is an organization.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that make a living.
Yes.
There's
people that depend on the band of Heathens.
Playing. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
When you're in that position,
yeah.
Are you cognizant of that? When you book solo shows, you just do it because, hey, we have this week off and I can go down and...
Yeah, mostly, you know. I think it's always like secondary or tertiary, you know. I think the band takes up most of my time, you know. And that's cool. It's definitely...
Yeah, that's your band.
Yeah, it's definitely the time commitment. But it's nice getting out and doing other stuff, too. And like me and Gordy will get out and do some... do some duo shows and stuff like that. That's fun too, you know, kind of work on some new material.
Yeah.
Give it a chance to just kind of test it out in front of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely keeping everyone busy enough, but not too busy is like the
balance.
Yeah, man, you know?
Yeah. Well, we have a lot to talk about, but first thing I want to touch on is you were a solo artist around in the mid 2004, 2005. I'd see you at the Momos or whatever.
In the aughts.
and then you guys started something. How did it happen? It was Colin Brooks is the guy that left.
Colin,
and
left.
I remember him. Yeah,
and Brian Keane was in it.
Brian
really
Keane
early
was
on.
In early. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it was
he
like
was the guy that I knew best out of all of you guys.
Mm-hmm. And I've met all those other guys probably through Brian. You know.
Right.
A few of us had a residency gig at Momo's,
right.
The great Momo's, the Defunct. And it is funny, in retrospect now, I was thinking about it, like, you know, people talk about little scenes and places and things that have happened in places, and I was just thinking about, like, all the people that were always at Momo's hanging out and playing, and, like, I was really new to town at that point, so I just thought, wow, this is Austin's so great, like, everywhere in Austin is like this, you know?
Yeah.
But it really wasn't.
No,
it was
wasn't.
Like a really unique... cool thing.
And there were bands, it wasn't just, I mean, there, a lot of bands formed like that out of there.
Mm-hmm. Well, just people.
And a lot of it, I think, had to do, inspired by the success that you guys really just kind of like, it seemed like you guys were always on a trajectory going up.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it was steady.
Yeah.
It wasn't like all of a sudden you were, but like you guys formed in 2005
yeah.
and by 2007 and 2008 you were like debuting at number one on Americana charts and stuff, right?
Yeah, go figure, right?
Yeah. But like that band the Coveters came out of there.
That was fun.
I had a band Liars and Saints that kind of came out of that room.
It was
you know what I mean?
It seems like it was a bunch of people that like to keep the same hours would end up hanging out with each other, you know, or like having drinks together.
So you guys all shared a night?
Yeah, totally. And then and, you know, there was always lots of interplay, people jamming with each other. Hey, come up and sing a song, play keys or play guitar or whatever, or play drums because the drummer has to go to the bathroom. Like, literally, like, ridiculous stuff like that.
I have a picture on my MySpace that I found today looking through stuff of me playing with you guys.
No kidding.
Yeah, I played with you guys.
Awesome. Well, it was good. Like, it was kind of the... whoever was around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, you want to get up and play this week? Or
yeah.
That was so fun. It was just... this super loose, awesome, cool thing, you know. But honestly, like with so many shows that I went to see there, it was like that, you know. If I go to see Drew Smith or Dan Dyer or Susanna Schaffel or whatever, you know, Warren Hood, like just everyone that was playing there, it was always like, hey, man, if you're around, do you want to come down and sit in?
Yeah.
Just like don't even just hop up there. Don't even say anything, you know. Like
yeah.
just or you'd hop up on stage and someone would give you their guitar. You know, it's just, you know, yeah. Well, you were there, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I guess maybe to articulate for the listeners, though.
No, yeah, definitely.
It was a little magical thing going on there, yeah. For sure, you know.
Paul created, and he managed you guys at first, right?
He did, yeah, he did manage us for a while. I think he really created a cool space there to just kind of allow that. You know, he always kind of encouraged and fostered this environment of, you know, trying to put people whose music he liked together that maybe otherwise wouldn't have put themselves together to just kind of do stuff and create and see what happened, which in the case of like the Coveters, you know what I mean? Which was like a really fun little cool.
And he kind of put that together,
yeah,
didn't he?
I think so.
He was
like,
hey, you guys all come on Monday and play.
I came into that kind of late. I think I came in to sit in for Dan Dyer on a couple of shows and I ended up doing a bunch of stuff with them. But that was super fun too, you know, just tons of really talented creative people on that. So you know, I don't know. Anytime there's an opportunity to be involved with something like that, you know, that's great. That just totally excites me, especially when it's something that's happening really visceral and it's just, we're not thinking like, we're not making a record. We're not doing anything other than like, we're going to jam.
Being in the moment.
We're going to write a song so we can jam some more.
Yeah.
And see what happens, you know? That's such great fun.
Yeah.
So.
And so, how did you guys get the idea to do this together?
For the Heathens?
Yeah.
Well, really, I can't remember if it was Brian or I can't remember who it was initially, but it was kind of like, hey, we're all doing, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 time slot or midnight, whatever. And we're playing with each other so much. What if we just do, why don't we try combining, you know, like we'll all just get up there at the same time and we'll have a rhythm section. You know, I think the joke at the time was kind of like, we can all tag up together and we'll be able to pay the rhythm section pretty good because it's only going to be one gig for them now.
Right.
But they'll actually make decent money as opposed to making like, you know, $15 per set or
whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And we thought it would be really fun. That was it. Honestly, that was like, that was really it. And that was kind of the genesis of it. And
that's how things end up successful.
Right.
Because I feel like not that Skyrocket, it's grown and it's done a thing. And people come to me sometimes like, hey, I want to talk to you because I'm thinking about starting this. And I'm like, well, totally. You have to have no expectations. Go meet your friends at a rehearsal place. Learn 5 fucking cover songs and go play for free at Hole in the Wall with no, just because you want to do this thing with your friends.
Yeah.
And then somebody from Wendy's corporate office will offer you $6,000 to play a part. I mean, I don't, there's no combination.
No, you're right.
You just like when you get together and do something from the heart, people, I mean, and that's how people reacted to the Heathens.
That's
I remember going there. I remember going there early on. Paul said, come out, see the guys. I think Brian did because I was working with Rachel a lot at the time.
Yeah.
And so I went out and saw it, and it was a good sized room. And then I remember the night that I did play with you guys. I remember I'd gone out on tour for like 6 weeks or maybe 2 months and come back, and it was slammed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like full.
Yeah, it became a fun thing for sure. It was just the kind of thing where like I said, whenever people were in town, people would come down and sit in. So at some point it just became this thing where like, half of the room was like musicians that were hanging out, and if anyone was in town and they wanted to sit in, they would do that. So then people that were just, you know, like at the time I felt like there was a good generation of people that were really into music, like just, you know, fans as well too, just people that lived in Austin that were like just thirsty for like just people I'd see, because I went out every night too, you know, I'd see every night at different shows and being like, man, I love coming because I just don't know what's going to happen, you know, like Guy Forsythe might sit in this week, or Patrice Pike might be around and she's going to come down, or you're around and you're going to come, you know what I mean? So it was just like, they just thought that was the greatest thing. And I mean, we thought it was the greatest thing too. You know, it was a gas just having people come on. let's mess something up together in front of a bunch of people and they'll love it, you know?
Yeah. And I was watching your videos today. It seems like that vibe has stayed.
That's always been
the band.
Yeah, that's been the intent and the idea. I think when the band came together in a weird way, it was kind of always like that was kind of always what I heard, you know, having a band being like, you know, everyone singing a lot and playing a lot off of each other, and they're not really being like necessarily a lead, you know, a front man or like a lead central point, but a kind of thing where it was like, you know, well, let's just pass the ball around and kind of feed off that sort of energy, you know?
Yeah.
I always like that, especially if you like the people that you're playing with. You know, I've never really been one much for the whole, like, well, hey, in this part, you're going to play this, and you're going to... It's like, well, to me,
right.
I just... You want to play with people that you like what they do, right. And they do what they do. And you got... And you, there's a little tuning of it, but, you know, in general, everyone kind of is free to do what they want because, you know that everyone's serving in the spirit of what you're doing.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's not, yeah. It's not an ego trip. It's not something that's driven by someone's need to be flashy in a situation. It's just like, okay, well, this is the music, and we're going to do what serves it best, you know?
Right. It's interesting, too, that you guys have, you walk a line, and you do it very well between jam and, like, singer-songwriter. It's really interesting.
Some would say that we're walking the line well. Someone would say that we're not serving any of those masters, you know, but, yeah.
I mean, to me, I'm not a fan of, like, the jam genre in general.
Uh-huh.
I am a fan of bands that have great songs that haven't, and that's where you guys, to me, fall into that.
Agreed. Well, it's always about the songs first, really, right?
Yeah.
I agree with you as far as, like, music that's just straight jamming for the sake of jamming is, like, I have no interest in that at all, you know?
I've never heard Widespread Panic, but you guys, to me, I don't think...
No.
I mean, I've never heard them, but I don't put them in there with you.
I haven't heard much of them. But, you know, like, I think the thing is, like, I think bands like, you know, like the Grateful Dead would be considered a jam band or whatever. But the thing about the Grateful Dead is, like, they have fucking great songs. You know what I mean? It's like, that's why they were able to be a jam band. Or like the Allman Brothers. Like,
exactly.
They had great songs.
That's what I'm talking about.
And
yeah.
That's what people, like, people didn't love those bands because they jammed. They, like, they got, there was a, that was a facet of what they did, I think, that people
They got hooked
into
in
that.
With the song. When you go to see them, all of a sudden, there's this whole new world that they're in the moment, and every night, like, you guys record your shows, right?
Yeah, every night, every night.
That is such an awesome thing.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, it was, the band is the kind of thing where it was like I said, anything could happen at any time. So it was like, you know, and people were like, yeah, man, we like your records, but, you know, it's a different thing coming to see this show. I was like, well, so, and we had some people that would come out and tape shows and stuff like that, but it was kind of like, that was cool, and that was always just like a subculture that I was pretty into, you know, like collecting bootlegs and stuff. Yeah, pretty into that stuff, but I also realize that that's not something that most people are into, and most people aren't going to go and spend their time hunting around archive.org or calling up, Joey Dead 33 to like score, you know, score a sweet soundboard matrix or something.
Yeah.
Just like, shit, well, we can easily get a couple things and have, you know, our tour manager now does it. Just, you know, set up a couple mics and take a board feed and mix the show on the fly and it, you know, and sound, you know, good enough, man. It sounds good. And it's like, you know, here, this is available now for anyone that wants to get it. So it's like,
it's pretty nuts. Like, Bob's been doing it now for 10 years.
I know. He's just fucking so, he's like on top. He's just in front of everything. You know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, you know, I think, well, maybe there was a, like, I think that, I saw someone do that. But they weren't selling that night show.
Mm-hmm.
They were selling the night before. And it might have been in two. It was Arthur. Joseph Arthur.
Oh, yeah.
And he was recording his shows. And he couldn't get them together fast enough. I think Bob saw that. And then he found that super fast duplicate. Now he does the
USBs.
The USBs.
He was doing
CDs. Yeah, he was doing CDs.
Remember that? That's awesome, you know? And then there was a thing that like Live Nation or some fucking... One of the big corporate concert promoters. They had this thing for a little while called Instant Live, which didn't really seem to take off because I think they were having a similar problem as far as like the turnaround time being fast enough. Especially like I think they were doing it for like, you know, they did it for like a summer of shows in their amphitheaters across America. So it was like, well, when 20,000 people are leaving, you know, the amphitheater, it's like we can't get this turned around fast enough to get it to them as they're walking out the door. Which is the thing. It's like, you know, I always thought like when we started talking about it, I was like, man. If I could have ever gone to a show when I was a kid
or
whatever and gotten the fucking show at the end of the night, can we swear? All day. I'm pretty good at it.
All fucking
pretty
day,
good.
Dude.
I got a PhD in that. you know, I mean, if I could go home with the show with my friends in the car and drive home, that, you know, that's killer. So
totally killer.
That
I mean, that's
it.
Amazing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm pretty amazed by that. You know, it's like...
Do you sell a lot of them at the end?
Yeah, a decent amount, you know. And then we have like an archive
thing.
Yeah, online, so people can kind of, who aren't at the show, can go and get it too. So it's been cool, man. I think it's a good experiment. It was good for the band too. I don't listen to the shows as much as I used to, you know, just out of been doing it for so long. But at different times, it's good to have that stuff just to listen and be like, man, did we fuck this up tonight? Or like, was this... Like, have we kind of sunk into playing this song in a way that we're not... wanting to do it just because it's, you know, like, you know, you go on the road for like a few months, like a song starts at a certain place, and by the end of it, it's just like the song
is completely different,
which can be awesome. And sometimes it's just like, okay, we got to get back to
yeah, we got to get back and practice this song again. Yeah,
so it's cool, and I think for people that, like, fans that are listening to it, it's cool to hear that kind of like evolution of a song too. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So. Okay, so if you guys did your first record was the Live at Momo's.
Yeah,
and then so it was just pretty much capturing what you were doing.
That
at the
was
time.
It. We were all kind of like, man, I don't know how much longer we're. I just don't know how long we're going to do this for. Nobody knew. It was just kind of like, well, as long as we keep digging it and we want to keep doing it, and everyone's around, we'll do it. But you know, in the process of that, why don't we record a night? And you, Eldridge Goins, our drummer at the time, was doing. I think he still has a studio. He was doing some recording and stuff, and he was like, "Well, I can get this.
Right.
I can get like an automated board."
Yeah.
And I was like, "It sounds good, man. You know." Yeah. So we recorded a couple of shows. And then, you know, Fat Caddy, this local label yep. at the time, they were like, "Hey, we want to put a record out for you guys, but we just need something to put out." So we was like, "Well, okay, well, we were gonna record these shows, you know." And I thought that would be fun if you wanna help us put that, just put it out. That would be awesome. I don't know what we're gonna do. I don't think we're gonna tour or do anything like that. But if you wanna just put this record out, just because, you know, like again, like they were, around, you know, John Patillo and Amy Patillo, they were around all the time down at Momo's too.
Right.
And we're fans of lots of the other bands that were playing down there. And, you know, so it was like, it was a very organic kind of just, I mean, I hate it because that's such a cliched sort of axiom, you know what I mean? But like, that's really
it's
what
true.
It was. There wasn't really anyone, there wasn't a whole lot of thought or anything going on
yeah.
there, you know?
And this is a lesson to you kids. Don't plan anything. Just go fuck off with your friends and it'll turn into something cool.
Just don't tell your parents what you're doing, you know?
So then you did another live album.
We did. We did a
live at Antone's.
Yeah, a DVD thing at Antone, at the former Antone's. And that was a similar situation. There was like this METV, the music TV station in Austin for a while. They came to us and said, "Hey, we got this little pilot program where, you know, we're financing the recording of a DVD, you know, audio package, and we'll provide the engineers, whatever, the whole thing. You guys would be interested in." And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely, sure. We'd love to do that. That sounds like a blast." So we did that.
And at that point, had people, was Brian still in the
Brian
band?
Brian had left at that point, okay. I think. I think what happened was when it kind of, I think initially it was kind of like we did, you know, we had played for like a year maybe, like just doing Wednesday nights in Austin and maybe the occasional like bang around thing in town. And then someone was like, "Well, what if we go to Dallas and Houston this weekend?" You know, I don't know. So we went to Dallas and Houston, and a bunch of people came out, and it was really fun. I was like, "Oh, shit, that was cool. Let's try that." You know, so that we did that again, and it was great. And then I think at some point, you know, we were talking to Paul, and it was like, "Well, what do you guys think about booking a little tour and, you know, going out for like a week or two and seeing how everyone does?" I was like, "Yeah, well, you know, that sounds cool. Let's try that." I think at that point for Brian, I think he wanted to. I mean, I think everyone's initial or original intent was to kind of return to doing their solo stuff, you know.
Right.
I think he was kind of at the front of that at that point, too, and had some stuff going on with his solo stuff. So once that started, this started being a little bit more of a time commitment. I think he was kind of like, "Well, this is cool, guys, but, you know,
right.
I got to do this. So when I think we were all kind of like, "Well, that's totally cool, but I think everybody maybe wants to put a little more time into this now." So,
right.
You know, if you're not going to be able to do that, then, you know, probably should go do what you want to do, and we'll do this for a little while and, you know, kind of see what happens. That was it, you know. It's like the kind of thing where you start working on a project and you have no expectations and there's no master plan or anything like that, and you're it starts to just work, you know what I mean? It starts to be this thing where it's like, "Wow, we're getting some cool stuff out of this, like creatively everyone's getting a buzz from it, and we're creating some new stuff that's cool that only exists in this space that none of us are able to do on our own as far as like the kind of music we're writing or like how we're presenting these songs." You know, so at some point it kind of becomes this thing where it's like, okay, well, you either keep doing what you're doing and it's a kind of stagnant situation, or you say, like, "Well, let's all invest a little bit of time in this, and maybe let's bring some new material in that we've all been working on our own, or we can work on it together or whatever. And let's see what," you know, that was it. So that was like kind of the inspirato, shall we say, for doing a studio record. You know, it's kind of like, "Well, let's all get together and say, let's put a record together and see what that sounds like."
Right.
You know? Because before, like, it was a jam. It was loose. It was like, "Let's just get together and fuck around." And we were still fucking around a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but in a situation where it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, you got this car and it's like, "Well, how fast can this thing go?" or whatever, you know?
Yeah,
so that was
totally.
You know, you get into stuff and it's like, well, it's fun kind of just flirting with someone, you know, but when you start to fall in love with it, it's like, okay, let's see how, you know, what is this going to do? What's this going to be, you know?
Yeah.
And that was it. That's where it kind of went from just being the weekly thing to being like, let's, you know, this is a creative entity. Let's maybe give it a little more love and water and sunshine and see what happens, you know?
Yeah. And had you guys gone to Europe after you finished that thing yet?
We went to Europe after the first studio record, which would have been like 2008 or 2009. And
that's the one that Ray Wiley did, right?
Ray Wiley did do the first record.
How was that working with him?
Awesome. He was awesome. I mean, he was like fucking just like, guys, that sounds really good, but just do it cooler. And it's like, and everyone's like, I know exactly what you mean, dude. You know what I mean? So he was very like, I mean, he just knows. He's been playing music and been in this for so long that it's kind of like you hear
it. How did that come about?
Man, we met Ray. I think we went down to do, he's done this radio show in New Braunfels, you know, KNBT for a while. It's just fucking hilarious too. And so I think he invited us down to come and play. And we went down and we had a good time. And he's like, hey, man, you guys should let me produce a record for you. Whatever. I was like, cool. That sounds great, man. Tell us when to be there, you know?
Yeah.
So we met Ray at a Dairy Queen in Dripping Springs and hashed out the details of our plot for world domination.
That is awesome.
And that was it. So, you know, and he was able to bring some friends of his in, which was awesome for us too, you know.
You guys had like Bruton on the record.
Yeah, like Bruton played, Patty Griffin.
What a great thing.
Griff Morlicks.
Yeah.
So it was cool. It was cool in a way too. And I felt like it was kind of this really like just nice moment of kind of being like, you know, these guys are everyone, all of them so well respected and have done such great stuff, and just kind of being like to this little fucking new band of assholes.
How was it working? Yeah. You know, was it working with Bruton? That's a guy that's like one of
fucking
the
fucking shit. I mean, he fucking cruised up in his Porsche, pulled his mandolin out of the back of the, you know, his little mandolin out of the back of the thing, walks in. He's like, hey, fellas, you know, and he goes in and just lays, you know, like three tracks down, all of which were just amazing and totally different. And we're like, I think, yeah, man, it sounds good. I think we got it. You know, he was great. He was just, and John Chipman, our drummer, you know, John had known Steven because they were playing in the Resentments for a long time.
Right.
You know, so that kind of just came together pretty naturally. It was, so there was like a good rapport with him, you know.
He's a guy that I'm sad I didn't start this sooner.
I know, me too.
You know what I mean? Yeah, he's a guy that I love talking to. Whenever I got to, I always felt like I was talking to someone special, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
He
man.
Had that about him.
Absolutely. He's like, it's weird. You're right. And I guess you would maybe have had to like be in his presence to kind of pick up on that, you know? But this kind of sort of thing, like all the guys, all the women loved him and the guys wanted to be him and that sort of, you know, that whole sort of thing.
Yeah.
He definitely had that kind of aura.
He did something cool one day. I was at this, I was getting my amp worked on. And this guy didn't have it ready. And it was supposed to be ready, but he was doing the thing where the guys that work on your shit bitch at you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, man, you're paying me money, but fuck you for this stuff.
Yeah, and he's bitching at me. And Bruton was like outside the thing and just literally opened his thing. And he was like, hey, man, you do this for a living. Like, just fucking leave Johnny alone.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, you're like also like a superhero.
Yeah, he was awesome.
And that guy totally shut up, too. Totally. He was like,
Yeah.
You want me to go get him again?
Yeah. Now, he had been around the block a few times, you know what I mean? So, yeah, man, for sure. That was definitely, that was certainly an honor and a privilege to get to, you know, be connected with him through some music.
Yeah. You guys ever work with Gurf in the studio?
We did. He came in and played on the, he played
No,
on
I mean
the,
like
oh,
with him and
No, Trump? He actually mastered the first record.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he mastered.
Yeah.
We love did, that dude.
We didn't either till Ray said, Gurf's going to master the record. We said, cool, man. That sounds good, you know?
God, working with both of those guys like at the same time must have just been like.
Yeah, well, Gurf came in. I think Gurf played like pump organ or something on a track. And
he's just so cool, too.
Yeah, he
man.
Is cool. He's got a great aesthetic, you know?
All
they're
those
like
guys. Like Yodas. Totally. You know what I mean? They're like the Jedis.
Yeah,
they're
Ray
like
is
the older Jedis.
Ray Wiley Hubbard is the fucking the Yoda of the Texas of Texas music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of like what everybody wants to kind of be like.
Yeah.
You know, that's doing Texas music or whatever.
Years ago, I was supposed to go on a show. And my Uncle Chuck, this sounds so convoluted, and I realize why he probably never asked me back again. But my Uncle Chuck's mom was dying,
mm-hmm.
and like it was all happening.
Yeah.
And his stepdad was there like alone.
Uh-huh.
My Uncle Chuck lives in Houston.
Uh-huh.
He called me and he said, hey, you got to go and sit with my dad because this shit's going down.
Yeah.
And of course, it was the same day that I was supposed to be on Ray's show. Oh. So I had to call Ray and be like, my uncle's mom is dying and he wants me to go hang out with his stepdad.
Oh, no.
Which just sounded so made up.
Yeah.
You know, that it was a...
We'll talk to Matt and we'll write an email and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I'll ask him again.
Yeah,
you should. I want him to come on this show, too. Anyway,
you should. He'd love it. It's good to talk to him.
So the next record that you did was... 1 foot in the ether.
1 foot in the ether.
And was that a George Reef production?
No, that was we did that at Mark Addison's place.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we self produced it with some with a nice assist from Mark.
Yeah.
And that was just the kind of thing where like we had done the first record. It was fun. We had started touring. That was going good, and we wrote a bunch of songs. You know, in this period, and we're like, well, let's fucking go in the studio and record these, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that was like, we did that in like 4 days or something. So that really? Was, yeah. And that was cool. At that point, the band was kind of like, was pretty cooking. We were, you know, we had kind of like been on the road and played a little bit and kind of started flexing that muscle. And, you know, so that record's pretty live. I mean, they're all pretty live, but that one, I think in particular, was caught us at a good point.
Yeah. You know? When you went to Europe, what was your how did you go? Did you go opening for somebody or did you go with Ray or play some festivals?
We just went over. The first thing we did was we're on a label called Blue Rose over there, and what they had this a Blue Rose Christmas party every year that they would host in Germany. And they'd have like a few of their acts come over and play. So that was kind of like our introduction to the German audience. That's kind of where our European thing began. But you know, the label would rent this club out, of this big club, and maybe like 750 people or something like that, and just fucking pack it full of people and have a Christmas party basically, you know, like. And I think we played, the Bottle Rockets played, and a few other acts on their roster played, and we just went and played and had a really good reception. I think we had booked like 3 or 4 other shows, and they had really been awesome in helping us promote the tour. They were really into the band, which is just kind of like, you know, whenever like people talk about getting a record deal or having a deal, it's like you can only dream that like the label's super into it and they want to help you promote. And that's kind of what happened. It's like, you know, wasn't like there was an infinite scene of people over there that were into American roots music or whatever, but enough that it was like, you know, when we went, it was like, oh wow, this is fucking like.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because really like that's the perception over here, is that there is like there's 80 zillion people just waiting for American roots people
to
come and play.
80 zillion people in Europe. And I think people go to see lots of music. It's funny, though, if you look at the way things are now, like, American bands hardly tour over there like they used to. I mean, like, this is just, like, everything at this point, though, you know? Yeah. But I think, I mean, I remember, like, when bands would release an album and go on a tour for, like, 18 months or whatever, and, like, 3 or 4 of those months would be playing everywhere in Europe.
Yeah.
You know? But it's, in a weird way, once the EU happened, that's actually happening less than it did before, I think.
That's weird.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I'm sure like maybe on the really super high end of things it's the same, but it seems like on the kind of like, you know, the club level and like kind of the intermediary, like, you know, big club or small theater thing, it's, you know, it's, there's like less of a business for it now.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Well, so did that record do well? Addison record?
That record did good too. Yeah, that was that went to number one on Americana as well, which like we were fucking dumbfounded by that again, you know. And just,
you guys
like,
get a lot of radio play, like AAA.
A little bit. We're kind of, we fall a little bit out of the commercial AAA format, you know, like with some non-com AAA, which would be like your NPR stations and things like that around America. You know, you get to hang out and have meetings and with radio people and stuff. They explain these things to you, and you're just like, fucking, I don't understand. But yeah, whatever, man. You know, yeah. To me, it was always like a good song is a good song. It's like whatever kind of music it is. If it's like, you know, Nashville country or, you know, fucking hardcore, it's like, I hear a good song, it's like, well, that's a good song. And to me, it would be like, I'd listen to it on any radio station there was. But apparently the way that people program and do business, there's some sort of idea that like, for some reason, people only like to listen to one kind of music, which has always been like incredibly fucking befuddling to me. You know?
People can only handle hearing 10 songs over and over.
Well, that's why the podcast format and, you know, even satellite radio to an extent is like a great refreshing welcome thing for someone that just doesn't want to hear the same 10 things over and over and over again, you know?
Yeah. Do you guys have satellite? What do you guys have, a van or a bus or what do you have?
We had a van.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sprinter?
No. We got a 15-passenger van. We had the same van that we had when we started. It's like, really? Yeah, 2008 or something like that.
Still doing good?
Fucking rolling. The honky is rolling.
The honky is rolling.
Yeah.
What's it? I forgot what I was going to... So then the next record that you did with Reef?
We did with Reef. We did that at the former Top Hat Studios, which was just
oh,
off...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I watched that video.
Yeah, we went... It's right off of Old Torf. John and Mary, they were great. So we did that record there. That was cool. You know, it was just, at that point, it's just kind of like, go on the road, tour, come home, get some songs together, make a record, you know? It was like, I mean, ideally for me, that was kind of always what all I ever really wanted to do anyways, you know? So once I got rolling, it was like, cool, we'll just keep making records and going on the road.
You guys kind of had a system in place?
I think so. We actually did some different stuff with that record though. George definitely, approached it in a different way. I think that was the first record where we really started kind of becoming aware of like of putting stuff together a little bit more in the studio, as far as you know, well, we have this tool at our disposal, so let's maybe use it a little bit, you know. I mean, I think like all of us were into doing that on our own, but for whatever reason, like the collective vibe of the band had always kind of been like, well, let's just do whatever. Nobody's going to say anything about anything, and we'll just see what happens, you know.
Yeah.
I think by the time we got to the third record, it's like we had already done that a couple times, and if anything else, no one in the band was really a fan of repeating themselves.
Right, so, right.
I think with that in mind, we, you know, try to bring some different aesthetics into that record. You know, and that made for an interesting working experience. And I think the finished product was interesting too. It was a little bit kind of all over the place, but I like that. I kind of, a lot of the records that I'd always been into were kind of a little bit all over the place too, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good hang and good working situation again.
Yeah. Don't chew that. Sorry. Just chew my carpet.
We got the little doggy hanging
out. Yeah,
we
got Flautas.
Flautas.
He's hanging out for a podcast.
Podcast dog.
Where are you from?
I grew up outside of Boston.
Oh, yeah?
In a town called Andover, which is where, I guess Andover would be most famous for Phillips Andover, which is a prestigious prep school where lots of our presidents have gone and famous actors and authors and things of that.
Is that where, like, George W. Bush went?
He did. Okay. Sure did. Wait, is he the older one or the younger one?
W is the younger one.
Okay,
the one that was most recently.
He didn't go there. H.W. went there.
Okay.
Jack Lemmon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean we could probably
go
if anyone
on
go online and Google.
Did you go
Phillips
there?
Andover. I did not. I went to the public high school.
What was that?
They didn't
like?
Want to let me into the Phillips school. I actually applied there, I think. I had words with my interviewer. We didn't get along so good.
You did apply there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was kind of like, you ever see that movie School Ties?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of like,
wait,
that.
Is that the one where is a secret society?
Yeah. No, that's the one. Yeah, it was kind of like that, and kind of like Dead Poets Society.
Right,
it had
right.
that whole
like
sort of vibe about it.
Boarding school.
It's like weird. Like, this is weird little, like, you know,
prep school.
Privileged class of people, and, you know, weird little.
Did you grow up in a wealthier situation?
Andover is a pretty affluent town. You know,
I
want to say my family was affluent, but my parents wanted us to get a good education, so they you know, kind of boned up. And
what did they do?
My dad.
What did they do?
My dad. They've done a bunch of stuff. My dad's kind of an entrepreneur. You know, he's had like several businesses doing different stuff. They own like a convenience store when I was a kid. So,
cool.
Like 5 or 6, I was behind the register. So it's kind of like at an early age and indirectly got like a lot of training for dealing with all different kinds of fucking weird people and people and stuff. So it's like, you know, being out on the road and being in some sort of like traveling circus, but never really seemed like much of a stretch. You know what I mean? It was really like, no, this is cool. I've met someone like you before, or like, oh yeah, I know what kind of, like, I've met a person like you before. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, so it was a pretty interesting childhood. I think, like, you know, grew up like close to Boston, spent a lot of time in Boston going to see music. And
what years was that? Like, what was the scene?
My parents started taking, like, my dad was going to school at Harvard. He would take me down there to hang out, just like, he'd go and study, and he'd leave me to just kind of, I mean, I was talking to someone about this the other day, like the stuff that like our parents let us do. I have a daughter now. I couldn't imagine letting her do that stuff. But, you know, as a young kid, getting to walk around Harvard Square and just like watch people busking, playing in the subways, or, you know, there was this club Posse there, which is a really famous folk club. We're kind of like back in the day, you know, like Springsteen had played there, and, you know, Joni Mitchell and Van Morrison. It's like, you know, it's like 100 people. But at this point, probably more like the New England folk scene, you know, that was kind of going on at the time. And this would be like the late 80s.
Okay.
late 80s, early 90s. And then, you know, and then I kind of started getting into my whatever I was getting into.
How did you get into it? Like, what was the... Did you ask for a guitar? No, sign you up for lessons?
My dad played guitar around the house when I was a kid. I took an interest in it. He would play, and I think I'd look at him and be like, well, how'd you do that or whatever? And he'd show me, and I kind of, like, was able to do it pretty quickly. And I think they were kind of like, well, maybe you have an aptitude for this or whatever. And it was never, like, they never were really, like, pushing me into doing anything, you know? Okay. It's kind of like, do what you, you know. But if we're going to take guitar lessons, you have to do it for at least a year.
Okay.
That was like the stipulation. So I just fucking drove them nuts by like not practicing for a year and wasting their money and going. And I don't know if in retrospect, I probably wasn't wasting their money, but at the time it was kind of like, you know, the idea is like you're taking lessons, like you practice, that's how you get better at it. Yeah. You know, but I would much rather like have listened to the radio or listen to records and try to learn those songs than play scales and, you know, kind of learn how to read music.
It's interesting it depends on the teacher that you get, because I was completely uninspired my first, I didn't even want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I was learning the shittiest songs, and I was like, I want to learn what I'm listening to, not Red River Valley.
Yeah, likewise.
You know?
I had a few guys that were good, and I took lessons from a bunch of different people, piano and guitar, and, you know, and in retrospect now, as like an adult, you can kind of look back and be like, oh, that was, you know, there were some valuable lessons to be taken from all of that stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, at some point I found a guy that was cool and was like hip to what I wanted to do and got it and was just like, yeah, man, like just fucking, I'll show you how to play that. And,
yeah.
You know, just like develop a love for it. You know, that's the thing. Because if you develop a love for it, then you'll
want to do, you'll want to practice when no one's around or telling you to practice.
Right. And in the end of the day, like learning how to be a musician is different than learning how to be an artist, you know? And I think at an early point, it's like, I really didn't, as much as I liked Motley Crue or whatever, it's like, I couldn't play like that, you know? And I didn't really, at some point it's like, well, I could play this song, but it's not going to sound like them. And that's cool. So maybe what that means is that I'll probably have to figure out how to do whatever.
Your own thing.
Yeah. Whatever I want to do. And that's really it, you know?
How, what did you start off? Did you have a band?
Oh, like your first, fuck yeah.
When was your first band?
Like sixth grade.
No shit.
Yeah.
What was it called? That's what I love is the first band names.
I don't know. I don't know if that band even had a name. I had a band called Red Tide, which was an awesomely terrible name.
That's
I had a band
awesome
called
name.
Praxen. I don't even these fucking ridiculous, these ridiculous names. And in high school, I had a band called Dr. Head's Rhythm and Blues Revival. So we got
that's interesting.
Yeah, we got into doing like all this old soul and R&B. That kind of like saved my life coming out of like glam metal.
The name of that band sounds like if you guys did like a Sgt. Pepper album and took on a different band name, that could be a great name for you guys.
Yeah. Well, I was like, all my friends called me Head for some reason. I think because it rhymed with Ed. So then I became Dr. Head, and then we just had this, our job was basically to frustrate and annoy the administration and rile the kids up into a frenzy.
That's good.
Yeah, it was great.
What kind of music was it?
It was just R&B, like old R&B stuff, but it was just fucking cool. We just learned a bunch of old tunes, had a couple of our friends play horns. You know, we had the whole thing, like, you know, a couple of
my cool.
friends singing backup, girls, and, you know, it was a blast, man. It was a blast.
So what made you move to Austin? Like, what was going on? Were you playing up in Boston after you got out of school? Did you go to college?
I did.
Where'd you go?
University of New Hampshire.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about all you got to say about that.
No, that's pretty cool.
It was just whatever. And again, whatever. Going to college was more about kind of listening to records and getting baked and just, you know, skipping class. And
what'd you get a degree in?
Business administration.
Oh, that's cool.
It was, yeah.
I bet
again,
it helps
in retrospect,
now.
Again, yeah. They didn't teach you how to balance a checkbook, but I did learn about operations management and business statistics, you know? So, word of the wise, two kids, business statistics and marijuana do not mix well together, you know?
No, that math, sounds terrible.
Writing papers and weed is good, but math and weed, not as good. Anyways, there's your public service message to stay off of the drugs. Or take them, whatever you want to do.
Just don't do... The business
just
statistics.
Don't do business statistics. And weed. Austin. Man, you know, I'd been a few times, and I was kind of having fun playing around New England and touring. I, you know, doing a little bit of national touring from there, just with my own stuff. But I was kind of like, man, you know, I really want to go live somewhere else and check it out and see what's going on. And you know, I had just gotten married. My wife and me were talking and. You know, kind of like, well, where would you want to live? And she wanted to move, and I was like, well, I want to go somewhere where there's like some music happening. You know, I want to go somewhere that has a good music scene where people.
Is she a musician?
No. Not at all.
She's just the coolest person that ever
just
lived
cool.
so far.
Well, she wanted to move and do some different stuff too, I think too.
What does she do?
She's an interior designer.
Oh, that's
decorator.
Cool.
Decorator, yeah. Yeah, so she is an artiste in her own regards. But I've been to Austin a couple times. I think I took a couple road trips with some friends, maybe played at some point. I can't even remember. But just like came out on Monday night and was just walking around, like just so much fucking music going on. I was like, what is going on here? Like it's Monday night. There's like people are out everywhere. There's music going on. It's like I just never, you know, that was not happening where I was, you know.
Right.
So I was like, man, I would love to, let's come here and check it out. Let's live here for a year and just see what's going on here, you know. And like, just like as soon as I got here, I just felt like it was kind of like, man, I was supposed to be here. I should have been here like 10 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know what the hell I was doing, but yeah, it was just kind of like, oh yeah, this is it. This is exactly what this is.
How did you get a band together? Like, did you put an ad in the Chronicle or something? Did you just start going seeing bands?
No, I just started hanging out at Momo's, dude. Seriously, I ended up there and met a bunch of people playing, and you know, had a few friends, made a few friends over the first couple months of being here. Like, well, if you need a bass player, you should call so and so or whatever. And you need a drummer. I was like, that was it. And you know, had a few gigs, and you know, and then kind of just that kind of transitioned into the Heathens, and then you know, here we are 10 years later or whatever, you know.
Hey, I saw you guys were playing with Lucas Nelson.
Yeah.
That guy, I'm fascinated with him.
He's great.
He is great.
He's great. He's fucking talented, man.
Yeah.
And he's a sweet guy.
He seems to just go all out, man, when he's playing.
All out. It's cool. It's like, you kind of, it always seems like this thing when I think you're, if you're like the offspring of someone who's iconic or whatever, like, you know, Willie Nelson, it's like, you can kind of go two ways, you know, run scared for your life from it, or kind of embrace the gift that you're of that legacy and that family. I think he's done both, I think, in a really cool way. You know?
I like, I'm fascinated with that sort of thing. Yeah. I was friends with this guy whose dad was like a rock star, and I always thought it was kind of, he was always a little defeatist about stuff.
Sure.
And then, I had Paula in here,
mm-hmm.
and she was very cool, but she seemed to get a lot. Some of the stories that she told seemed terrifying. Like people chasing you into the bathroom and banging on the stall. Like, Willie's daughter, come out here, yeah. Willie's daughter.
I can't even imagine, you know.
Just by the end of the gig when people are drunk and they've got to tell you something. And it's just, imagine how many people have to tell her something.
I can't even, I remember, in 1964.
Yeah, exactly,
it was like, who the fuck are you?
I was at the second picnic. Yeah, I can just imagine. But he seems to really embrace it and just be himself.
Yeah, I think, from at least what I can glean and spending a little bit of time with him, the guys in the band are cool. He's pretty rooted. It seems like his family's all really pretty normal and together. So it's just kind of like, he's just fucking plays music. That's what he does. And he loves doing it. And he's, you know, his dad's Willie Nelson, I guess. That's amazing. I mean, I don't even know what that means. I mean, it's his dad, I guess, so it is what it is. But they have a great relationship in that, like, there's some sort of connection to them through music. Like, it's something that he found and he was inspired by, too, you know? So I think it's probably a great gift that they can share with each other.
Did you read this new Rolling Stone? That just came out.
I haven't seen it yet.
On the cover.
I saw that.
It's interesting. It seems like he keeps a lot of stuff in, like, personal feelings and things like this inside that he saves for his music. So it seems natural that his family would play music with him because that would be the real connection that they wouldn't get verbally.
Sure.
You know
that
what
makes
I mean?
Sense, man. Yeah. I think for a lot of us, I think anyone that's kind of like in a creative endeavor, there's some sort of unconscious level of doing that in which, like, you know, you're at your most open and maybe at your best as far as, like, you know, what you want to be, what you hope to achieve as far as like expressing your joy or love or sorrow or whatever to other people around you, you know, when you're in the process of delivering, you know, if you're a painter or you're playing music or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That's interesting.
How old is your daughter?
She's going to be 7 in December.
Wow. And how long have you been married?
10 years.
Jeez, man.
Mm.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
You keep it together, you do it, and it's
amazing.
Yeah. That's all. I was married. I was married for 10 years. That's it.
Yeah. It's hard, man. You know,
it's really hard.
It's hard. But I think, like, the thing is, it's hard whatever you're going to end up doing, you know?
I was listening to this interesting interview with the dude. What's his name?
Oh, Jeff Bridges?
Jeff Bridges.
Was that on the Nerdist?
On Nerdist.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
I love that, yeah. I've actually got it in my queue. I haven't listened to it yet, but I like that podcast.
When he gets to the stuff about, because he's been married to his wife for 37 years.
How the fuck, like, what is that?
He's like, you know, there's times when you hate each other and you just got to kind of like go into that and just go through it. Like, that's going to, it's not like, you know, we don't go through times of hating each other. Mm-hmm. We just don't leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, is that like a conscious, I know this is really personal to get into, and yeah, if no, you don't cool. want to talk no, about it, I understand, cool. but this is a fascinating thing, you know, to be an artistic person, mm-hmm. an entertainer, and maintain a 10-year marriage mm-hmm. that I'm, you know.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's, well, I think more insane probably for my wife than for me, you know, yeah. especially having a daughter now. It's like, I mean, that's like so much of that is kind of just thrust upon her because I'm just not there a lot, you know?
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, I think, or like if we could take wisdom from the great dude, it's kind of this, it's kind of a thing where it's like, you know, you just do it, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you're not just like, and then if some point and you're not doing it, then you're not doing it. I think it's like, you know, I think getting into this thing where like we have like, you know, this, our infinite access to everything has us thinking about everything all the time. It's kind of like, well, what if? And it's like, well, it's not though. What if is just what if it's not actually happening.
Exactly.
You know? And being married, it's like something like, and you know, being married less important to me than just being with someone. Like that's, you're, if you're doing that, and anyone that's in a relationship knows, it's like you're doing it, and yeah. it's like it's work, you know. You're,
yeah.
that's a constant sort of thing. Like you gotta wanna keep doing it, you yeah. know, and keep putting some energy into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so you know, like anything else, it's, you know, it's, there's the good with the bad, but it's like, you know, having a family is a great thing and a beautiful thing, and I love my family growing up, so it's like, you know, the goal would be to kind of hopefully reproduce the same, you know, situation for my daughter. Yeah. So when she comes out of it, we don't fuck her up too much, and she's, you yeah. know, able to go out into the world and be free and happy and do what she wants to do, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, that parenting, it frightens me. I don't have kids either, but like just that, like trying to steer someone in the right direction.
It's
so
pretty
that
heavy,
they
man.
Don't fuck up their whole lives.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. It's a pretty big responsibility. Again, like I try not to think of it like that so much as like I just try to have fun with it and try to trust my instincts, you know, and really just kind of let her guide me, you know, because she yeah. kind of tells me what she needs and what she wants, and I then it's like kind of up to me to be like, okay, well, I know you really want to do that, but maybe that might not be the best. That might yeah. not be the best thing to do right now, you know?
Yeah. Are there other musician parents in your circle
yeah.
of friends? Do you have like...
Oh, yeah, lots of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of them now, you know? So it's
so you're not like
everyone.
The weird guy at parent night?
No.
No, oh, we live in Austin.
Yeah.
Maybe you are the weird guy.
Yeah, I'm the weird, yeah. But it's cool. I've always liked being the weird guy, you know? My family was a little bit of the weird family growing up. And not because, you know, my parents weren't hippies or anything like that, but right. just this thing where it's like, my dad never was a corporate guy, you know? He never put on a suit and tie and went to work. And he never, you know, he never worked 9 to 5. And he, like, you know, we didn't take, like, a 1 week vacation in the summer like every other family. My family was just kind of doing its own thing. And that was super cool. And I've always been totally comfortable with that, you know?
Yeah. So you have brothers and sisters?
I have a sister, yeah.
What does she do?
She's an actress, model, does a bunch of stuff like
really?
That. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old is she?
She's like 14 months younger than I am.
Oh, wow. Irish twins, right?
Mm-hmm. Almost, yeah.
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 That's like Trish and Darren from Skyrocket.
Really?
I think they're like 10 months apart.
You have a brother and a sister in the band?
Yeah.
Oh, bless your heart.
That's awesome.
Is it really?
Yeah.
They're awesome. They get along good then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. They get along the best.
Really?
Unless they, there's a chance probably they deal with some stuff,
sure.
but not with us involved.
Cool. Cool.
And I've, you know, you see an eye roll every once in a while when one says one thing and the other guy's like, oh. But really, no, they don't ever.
It's all, I think that goes like, that goes one of two ways, right? It's either like, you're either like Phil and Don Everly, you know, or like the Brothers Robinson from the Black Crows, or like the Kinks or something like
yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah.
you know, or you
the
like
Oasis guys.
Yeah. The Oasis guys, you know, or you just, it's just like you have full love and it's, you can roll your eyes and it's not, it just goes by.
Oh, yeah, there's
just like
no,
what you do,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
Yeah. It's that's a, cool. that's a nice thing. So your sister, is she in anything that?
No, not really. I don't, she does a lot of kind of side work. And
is she in LA?
Extra stuff. No, she lives in Boston.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess people film stuff everywhere now.
Everywhere.
I don't think you really have to be in LA or New York to act.
She maybe would want to be there at some point, I think. I'm not sure. I'm not sure when, but yeah, you can kind of be anywhere and do your work, I think,
yeah.
at this point, you know. And music too. I think it's like, you know, you can kind of go around anywhere you want to be and
yeah, I mean, you guys
do.
Have your thing, it doesn't really matter really right. where you are.
Well, I mean,
as long as you're together.
Yeah, that's true. That's it.
You know.
Yeah.
And everyone lives in town. How much do you guys
live
together?
I actually live in Asheville, North Carolina now.
Oh, that's why it was hard to get you.
Mm.
Wow. So you that's weird.
I left the green pastures of Austin. But I'm here like a couple months.
But you
a
moved
year
to
still.
Like a sleepier. What was Austin exactly. was getting a little too moved, fast for you.
Totally. I'm not a speed guy.
Oh, what a beautiful place to live.
It is beautiful.
You are a lucky man.
I'm a commuter now, though. But the cool thing is now, when I'm in town, it's kind of like I'm back to before. Like I'm back to like almost being single again when I'm here. As far as like just
because you go out and
going
see
out,
bands,
yeah, seeing my friends,
and get to be a part
yeah,
of it, and,
which
yeah.
is cool, you know. So I'm kind of like getting to re-experience Austin again. And the interesting thing is, it's like totally different than it was 10 years ago to me, at least.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure. Yeah.
I mean,
think everyone that's lived
different.
Here for
yeah.
long enough would probably testify to that.
Oh, it's
you know?
So different.
So different.
It's so different, like just Riverside from last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I know, man. Every time I was staying with a friend, like Trevor, our keyboard player, I stayed with him a bunch, and he lives off of South Lamar. And when I moved to town, that's where I lived. And there was like, you know, there was like two used car dealerships, like a sketchy loan office, and the fucking a lingerie shop and a dry cleaner. And the Alamo was there, I guess. But, like, every time I drive down that road now, it's like there's a hole, a fucking eight-story hole in the ground.
Yeah.
And there's, like, some yeah. amazing new luxury condos. And
it's insane.
It is insane, man. Austin is, well.
So what's it like living in Asheville? What's it? I mean, living there must be
really,
awesome.
Like, it really is like Austin.
A long time ago.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
But it's smaller. I mean, it's always going to be
do
smaller.
Do you play up there? Do you go out and do
a little bit, not a lot. I'm not home a whole lot. So when I'm home, I'm kind of just home. Hanging out, going
awesome.
Going to school stuff, you know, hanging out with the kids
oh,
in the neighborhood.
I thought you meant like going to school, but you're going to school
I
stuff
would love
with your
to
daughter
go to school.
And stuff.
I should go back to school.
Really?
Yeah, why not? You know, why
what
not?
You,
sure.
What would you do this time?
No idea. It's a great question. Maybe something with literature, reading, yeah. writing papers.
Yeah.
I like that shit. That's fun.
You do know? You? You I read know. A lot?
I used to, not as much as I used to. I used to, you know, the things that I've lost, like kind of my ability to be obsessed with since I've kind of become a little more domesticated is watching movies,
yeah,
films and books.
Yeah.
Those things have been, they've suffered, but they shall
and when you go on tour, do you read a lot? Watch movies?
A little bit. I find, you know, honestly, I've been like really into podcasts. That's kind of been like, so I saw you were doing this. Like, man, I'm like, this is cool. I got to see what the fuck's up here with this.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I just found it's like traveling a lot. I just like the, you know, same thing we were talking before we got on the mics here about just listening to interviews and stuff, but I've just been enjoying that. You know, I kind of enjoy, even at a young age, I've kind of like really been into like hearing other creative people talk about
yeah.
their experiences, what
yeah.
they're, what kind of inspires them and what keeps them motivated to do what they're doing. And
yeah.
I just find it to be really interesting, you know?
Yeah.
And listen to music quite a bit, you know, still. So, you know.
You know, I found a lot of what... Like when I finally decided to do it and I had heard the WTF.
Love that.
And I'd really felt like such a kind of kinship with Marin, which I think has translated when we've met.
Mm-hmm.
But he, like what he was getting out of doing it,
mm-hmm.
I wanted that.
Yeah.
I wanted to feel more supportive and less... Kind of, why is that guy doing that? Why
totally.
Band of Heath is on fucking ACL?
Totally.
I've been playing Momo's long. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
dude.
Just that kind of shit that goes in your head, which
yeah,
it fucks you up.
Toxic.
And as you get older, there's more of it.
It's
weird because
yeah.
you think as you get older you'd become more sophisticated,
yeah.
but you actually have to take active measures
yeah. uh-huh.
to not feel like someone's success
mm-hmm.
was something plotted against you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, for well that not only that, but that their success happened in lieu of your success.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
you
like,
had to fail for them
yeah,
to do it.
It's funny.
They stepped on you.
Like everybody has that, I think, you know, it's like, but it's cool that maybe it's something that's kind of maybe like you can talk about it now. And
yeah.
Like they were all, I think that everyone actively is trying to not be like that.
Yeah.
And not feel like, I think, you know, for like, I've always had thoughts like that, but I think in my mind, I've always kind of felt like I'm really happy for anyone I know when they're doing well, because it's like they're doing their thing. And that's really what it is. Like they're doing their thing.
Yeah.
Even stuff that I think is fucking terrible that I don't like and I couldn't support it. It's like Well, it's they're not doing that, not because I'm not doing it. Like, I couldn't do that even if I... There's people that are like, why don't you just sell out, or why don't you write a fucking song? And it's like, well, because I can't. Because I'm not...
Yeah, don't you think
why don't
I
you
would?
Do a thing like them? It's like, well, because we're not the same. I'm not them.
Yeah.
And like, even to try to be like them, I wouldn't be them because I'm not them. You know, like, it just becomes this deep, like, cosmic, esoteric discussion. But it's like, yeah, you know, so it's kind of this thing where it's like... And that's no fuel. It, like, it gives you no creative fuel. It's totally exhausting. It's and with everything like available to us all the time now, that has become more of a struggle, because it's like, well, they have like, someone has like 20,000 followers on Twitter, or like 18,000 followers on Instagram, and like, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
That's cool. Good for them.
And someone can create their own reality. Do you know Billy Harvey?
I do. Yeah, I don't know him well, but I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we were doing this, and I was like, man, you had an amazing year. You were in India filming this movie, and then you went and filmed this other movie, and you played this show. He's like, yeah, that's like 6 weeks out of my year.
I know.
What about the other like 10 and a half months that I was just sitting in my tub crying? Like, I'm not posting that shit.
Totally true.
That's not my status update.
I'm not tweeting that stuff. It's totally true. But that's, I think, you know, talking about Marin, the WTF podcast, that's what's cool about that, because he does share some of the 10 and a half months of crying in the bathtub.
He does. You know. And you know what? I guess I met him into it, like further into the WTF, like over the last couple of years. He is like the nicest fucking guy.
I'm sure.
Like and I don't know if I always get introduced to him as, oh, this is Johnny. He's like this musician guy that blah, blah, blah. And he's always like, like all he wants to talk about is guitars and shit.
It's awesome.
But he's a nice guy. Yeah. And I wonder if a lot of it just came from settling down, because he felt like, even if it wasn't tremendously successful, I think that this exchange brings you so much closer to your own community.
Yeah.
And just keeps you involved, you know?
I think, man, you know, what's funny is I think most creative people are really nice. So rarely do I meet like someone in a band or someone that's an artist or whatever, and I'm like, that guy's a fucking asshole. It's almost never like that. It's like, even if I meet someone and it's like you don't immediately hit it off with them or whatever, it's like, when I'm meeting people, I don't have this expectation that we're going to have like some sort of life changing exchange. Once in a while that happens.
Yeah.
You know, you meet someone and it's just like bang right away. Yeah. And it's like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But usually you meet people and it's like, well, you're pleasant. And all this other stuff where they like, you know, expressing like someone's like, oh, so-and-so is an asshole. So it's like, you know, I know. It's like, maybe they're not having a good day, or like, maybe they really didn't want to talk to you about the same thing they've been talking to everybody about for the last 2 hours, you know? So it's kind of like, yeah, it's funny. I always find like the people that I hit it off with, it's like, we probably have something else in common besides playing music too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of, at some point it's like talking shop isn't really that interesting.
No.
Because you're doing, you know, so just your job too, you know, like you're doing it all the time. So to meet someone who maybe does what you do but has like some other interests and knows some stuff about the world, and you can have a conversation about whatever.
Yeah.
About pancakes at fucking at Kirby Lane or whatever, you know, it's like, this is cool, you know?
Yeah, that's, doing this kind of thing like this made sense to me, because I did this anyway at Momo's between 2 and 5 in the morning.
Always.
You know what I mean?
Over drinks.
Yeah. Like a couple people sitting around, clubs closed, you know, you're hanging out. Like, shit, sun's going to come up soon. Got to go home.
Always the greatest moments. I always like, it's weird. It's like, I wish I had a tape recorder for so much of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But then I'm like, man, if I had a tape recorder, it would fuck it up, you know?
No.
But maybe it wouldn't. I don't know.
We should have started podcasts back in 2005 Momo's.
We would have been pioneering, man.
You know who had a podcast in 2005?
Who's that?
Or 2006? Fastball.
Did they really?
Yeah. Tony and Miles were the first dudes that I ever knew that had one. And theirs was one of those drink where they would get, like, drink wine with people and talk about it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Like a wine podcast.
They still doing that or not?
No, they did like 4 episodes. They did good people like Mike Mills from REM and shit like that. Yeah.
Killer.
Yeah. I don't know if you can still find them. I know a couple years ago when Miles was on here, we looked it up and found it.
Okay. How long have you been doing this for?
3 years.
Awesome.
Yeah, just put out episode 300 on
Congrats,
Friday.
Man.
Yeah, thanks,
That's
man.
Killer.
Thanks.
That's killer.
Yeah. What else do you listen to on podcasts when you're out there?
The Nerdist I like a lot.
Yeah, me too.
One of my favorite ones that is now gone is Alec Baldwin's...
Me too.
Yeah, what was that one called?
Here's the Thing.
Here's the Thing. Man, I listen to every one of those.
Yeah, me too.
It's fucking great. I listen to this guy, Bill Simmons, the BS Report, a little bit. He's kind of more of a sports guy.
Uh-huh.
And I used to be a huge sports fan, and I've kind of slacked off with that, but once in a while that gives me an opportunity to kind of like catch up. A bunch of info, and not in like a sitting down and watching Sports Center kind of way, because I find that just to be like fucking mind-numbing at this point. Yeah, totally, you know, it's like 10-15 years ago that was a cool show. They had like cool personalities on the show, like there was
Keith Olbermann on
totally. There's some writing on the show and like some interesting asides, and now it's just like fucking graphics and explosions and people that look pretty, and it's just like, I, you know, I just have so little interest in that.
That's every time I see it, it's always just like this array of like
I kind of like whenever it starts to go off the road a little bit, that's kind of when I start getting interested in it. Yeah, you know?
When do you what sports do you follow? Who are your teams? What's going on? Are you
basketball?
Boston guy?
Yeah, I'm a Boston guy. Basketball and football, really. Now, used to be baseball, but baseball is just too much of a time commitment.
Yeah,
you know. But whenever I go home, it's like, the Red Sox are having a fucking terrible year this year. You know, like, yeah, I haven't even seen a game, man. I don't give a shit anymore.
Who farted? You know?
Who farted? Right, exactly.
Sorry, I forget. Every time I hear that accent, that's the only thing that comes to mind.
Oh, that was farted, man. That was like everyone I grew up with was like, that was the jam.
Where's your accent? You don't have one?
Not really. I've been away for a while. I mean, it can come back, you know.
When you get up
it's
there.
It's right there, you know.
Hey, Dad, how's the car?
Yeah. It doesn't really come back that much. It's funny, too. I mean, it's a thing where it's like, it's like there's a joke about it now, you know. And then there's like the inside joke of people that live up there with like, you know, that like no one gets it right. Because it's like every ethnicity, every neighbor, like it's like really like literally, it's such a specific thing, like town to town, neighborhood to neighborhood,
right.
Like wealthy towns versus blue collar towns, white towns versus Hispanic towns, like Italians and Irish and Polish and like, well, you know,
are
like,
you Italian?
I'm half Italian. Yeah. You know, it's like this whole, like the Northeast sort of ethnic, like mash, like the mashed potato dish. It's like, it's amazing. You know, it's just like such a, like, there's such a unity of people and there's such a diversity of cultures at the same time, you know? Which is pretty cool. It's a unique thing.
What do you guys are going to do a West Coast tour?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going
in a couple weeks.
Yeah, in a couple weeks. We're going to the studio on Wednesday to cut like a song for the tour. We've never really done anything like this. So just kind of like...
Put out a single.
Yeah. Like, and kind of have a little tour with a little theme to it, which is going to be kind of...
Oh, cool.
Yeah, do some artwork for it.
Nice.
You know, just because it's like we're touring all the time. It's like, man,
how do you make it special?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's special for us, special for the fans, people coming out to see the shows that have been like, you know, they kind of continue to give us the space to do this, you know?
Yeah.
I know that like a lot of them are paying attention. So it's like, well, they're like, when are you guys going to have some new music for us? It's like, well, we've been kind of busy, you know? And they're like, well, yeah, okay, that's cool, but still want to really hear some new songs.
Yeah.
So we had a couple of songs and we're going to go in on Wednesday and hopefully we get something, you know, I don't know. You know, going into the studio, you never know what's going to happen. So.
And you're going into Wired, you said?
We're going into the Wired, cool. Yeah. So hopefully we get some cool stuff out of that, you know?
And people can find everything about you guys at bandofheathens.com.
Bandofheathens.com.
Great website. Is there anything that I'm missing?
I think you got it all, man.
It was nice having you over.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
And I didn't know that you lived in North Carolina. That is so wild.
I do. But I still love Texas.
Yeah, of course.
Love Austin.
Man, Asheville, what's it? Oh, the Biltmore.
Yeah.
That's the place there.
The Biltmore is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played there in Asheville, and I can't remember where.
There's a bunch of places. It's another one of those places. It's like, I think like 85,000 people live there. There's way too many music venues and cool restaurants and like, you know, artists. I mean, it's just like, it's saturated
a little art town.
With culture, yeah.
Is it expensive to live there?
It's like, it's kind of like this.
Really?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, Austin's getting expensive. It's getting expensive. People probably, you know, I think we all complain about the cost of living here, but I think if you look, you know,
elsewhere,
compared to, like, to live somewhere that had, like, maybe the cultural impact of a city like this, you're looking at, like, New York or L.A. or San Francisco. It's
Boston.
Like, in Boston, yeah. That's just, like,
super
outer space to live there,
yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot the name of the school. My brother just spent a year in Boston going to this accelerated MBA program.
Oh, wow.
And then he just moved to Bogota, Colombia.
Holy, whoa.
Yeah, to work for this weird company.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are you going to go visit him down there or what?
I don't know. I just talked to him online a couple of days ago. He just moved there.
Okay.
And I think he's there for like a year maybe.
That sounds pretty intense.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's crazy. So I'm not missing anything. Band of Heathens, hopefully a new album out.
Hopefully next year.
Next year. Yeah. And then a new single. Look for it in the next few weeks.
Yeah, next few weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And thank you, Ed.
My pleasure, man.
Take me away. Hear that whistle play a sad, sad song. Lay me down where the
All right, Ed Jurdy, the Band of Heathens. Fantastic band, man. I'm kind of honored. I feel like, you know, I've seen them since the beginning of their thing. I was part of that Momo's thing. So they're like, we're part of the same fabric of people, okay? Get out there and see them. Get involved with them. Go to the bandofheathens.com. See if they're coming to a town near you. I know that they're doing the West Coast. They're doing the Midwest. And that's all happening very soon. Look for their single coming out, bandofheathens.com. All right, do it. Do it. Do it up. And while you're out there getting involved with the Band of Heathens, be sure that you get involved with How Did I Get Here. You can go to our website, which is howdidigethere.podbean.com. You can go to our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here. You can like it and then see pictures of people and find out what's coming up and what's going on with the podcast. And if you want to know what's just going on with me, you can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy. All right, let's hear some more music from the Band of Heathens. Guys, episode 302 down. We are into the 300s. We are moving on up, moving on through higher numbers, higher numbers. All right, that's my new jam. It's called Higher Numbers. Here's some music from Band of Heathens. Let's get down.
Miles on the Gulf Stream, I hear the south wind moan. The bridge is getting lower, the shrimp boat's coming home. The old man down in the quarter slowly turned his head, takes a sip from his whiskey bottle, and this is what he said. I was born in the rain on the Ponza train underneath the Louisiana moon. I don't mind the strain of a hurricane. They come around every June. The high black water, a devil's daughter. She's hot, she's cold, and she's mean. But nobody taught her it takes a lot of water to wash away New Orleans. Came down from Chicago, he gonna set that levee right. He says it needs to be at least 3 feet higher, it won't make it through the night. But the old man down in the quarter, he said, don't you listen to that boy. The water be down by the morning, and he'll be back to Illinois. South wind moan, bridges getting lower, the shrimp boat's coming home. The old man down in the quarter slowly turns his head, takes a drink from his whiskey bottle, and this is what he said. I was born in the rain on the Ponza train underneath the Louisiana moon. Don't mind the strain of a hurricane. They come around every June. High black water.